Hello and welcome to Tantra Mar Report on CHMA 106.9 FM. We're broadcasting from the heart of the Maritimes, Sackville, New Brunswick, the traditional lands of the Mi'kmaq people, unceded in the Treaties of Peace and Friendship, first signed with settlers in 1725. I'm Erica Butler. It's Thursday, June 3rd. Coming up on today's show, the disappearance of a local man last week is under investigation by the RCMP Major Crime Unit. Students at Port Elgin Regional School are collecting t-shirts for their own memorial to the children of Kamloops Residential School. Artist talks are back at Strats, starting with Benjamin Evans speaking online this Saturday. The province has announced some success in reducing the number of people waiting a year or more for knee and hip surgery. And we bring back the check-in in a conversation with Mel's Tea Room owners, Wendy and Dave Epworth. But first, the COVID case update. There were 3 new cases of COVID-19 in Zone 1 announced Wednesday, all contacts of previous cases. Province-wide, there were 12 new cases announced. The St. John and Bathurst regions reported cases that have all been traced to travel or previous contacts. 3 cases in the Fredericton region are still under investigation. New Brunswick now has 140 active cases of COVID-19, with 6 of those in people isolating outside the province. Tuesday was a busy testing day in New Brunswick, with 2,500 tests conducted. 673 of those were in Zone 1. In Nova Scotia, there were 17 new cases of COVID-19 reported on Wednesday, and the total number of active cases in that province dropped to 311. 1 new case was reported in the Cumberland Health Network, and there are currently 7 active cases in Cumberland. PEI has reported no new cases since Monday. The island province now has 4 active cases of COVID-19. Newfoundland and Labrador reported a whopping 17 new cases on Wednesday. Luckily, all were traced to either travel or previous cases. That province now has 90 active cases of COVID-19. Health Minister Dorothy Shepherd and Chief Medical Officer of Health Jennifer Russell pleaded on Wednesday with New Brunswickers who haven't yet gotten a first dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, asking them to do so. So far, 64.5% of the eligible population have received a first shot of a COVID-19 vaccine. That's about 57% of the full population. Russell said that just over half of the appointments available at RHA clinics are booked between now and the deadline of June 7th.
There are approximately 45% of appointments through June 7th currently unbooked at our RHA clinics. So this is your call to arms. We need your arms to fill those clinics.
The next Vitalite clinic in Sackville is this Saturday, June 5th. Just over 72,000 New Brunswickers need to get a first dose by Monday in order to meet the first goal of the province's reopening plan.
I think we're aiming for midnight, June 7th. So I think they're going to be offering longer hours in some of the clinics to be able to accomplish that. So whatever time of day you can get in there, get her done.
Minister Shepherd reviewed the Path to Green plan, which could see cross-border commuters no longer have to self-isolate when they return to New Brunswick, and lift the Steady 15 limitation, opening up close contact to friends and family. The June 7th target could also see isolation restrictions lifted for travelers from PEI, Newfoundland, and 2 Quebec communities, but not for people coming from Nova Scotia. CHMA asked Minister Shepherd if there was any possibility that that could change to reflect the current situation on June 7th. Nova Scotia active case counts have been dropping dramatically, and that province has recently started coming out of its month-long lockdown. Shepherd didn't rule out the possibility.
Well, I think that we have set our targets for Monday, June 7th, and I won't say that we would never go back and revisit something, because quite frankly, all through COVID, we have had to pivot in real time many, many times. Right now, we've established that the bubble would be, our New Brunswick with our 2 Quebec communities, but that's always subject to be reevaluated on a daily basis.
There was also news to share on the second dose front.
New advice from the National Advisory Council on Immunization, NACI, based on recent studies in Europe, suggests that providing a second dose from another product is safe and effective against COVID-19. This new advice suggests that these vaccines are interchangeable without loss of effectiveness. This will give us the flexibility to provide more options in providing the second dose, which provides maximum protection against the COVID-19 virus. So we are really anxious to get everybody vaccinated with two doses. Those over 55 who received AstraZeneca as their first dose, and if the minimum of 8 weeks have passed, then they can book a second dose of AstraZeneca now or choose an mRNA vaccine when second dose clinics open up.
Russell said information on the second dose rollout will be coming next week. The disappearance of a local man last week is being investigated by the RCMP Major Crime Unit, with assistance from the Nova Scotia RCMP, according to a release by the police agency Wednesday morning. Jamie Laird was last seen a week ago and was reported missing by his family on Friday, May 28th. Police say that his vehicle, a silver 2012 Mazda 3, was discovered abandoned on Main Street in Spring Hill, Nova Scotia, also on Friday, May 28th. The New Brunswick RCMP release says information gathered during the course of the investigation has led police to believe criminality may have been involved in Laird's disappearance. Yesterday, CHMA reported on a plea for information from Laird's cousin, Alicia Strait, who says Laird's mother is worried sick about her son. Strait says Laird lives with friends in Upper Cape between Port Elgin and Cape Tormentine and works at a nearby potato farm. She says that on Tuesday, police tape went up around Laird's home and a roommate of Laird's was run over by a car. Jamie Laird is described as being 6 feet 2 inches tall and weighing approximately 264 pounds. He has blonde hair, blue eyes, and a full beard and wears prescription glasses, according to the RCMP release. His family is asking that anyone with information contact the RCMP. Port Elgin Regional School is creating their own memorial in honor of the 215 children whose remains were recently discovered on the grounds of a former residential school in Kamloops, BC. Students are gathering T-shirts, 215 of them, to represent each child so far accounted for in the mass grave. Student reporter Dallas Galinas, who is in sixth grade, asked his fellow students and other volunteers to bring T-shirts in a video posted to Facebook.
Hello, Miramar community. My name is Dallas and I am in grade 6. We need your help. We need 215 shirts for tomorrow morning. We are remembering the 215 kids who had lost their lives at the Kamloops Residential School. Please, please bring in shirts.
The shirts will be displayed on the school's backfield today. Guardians are asked to label the T-shirts with a name tag so they can be returned afterwards. Strutt's Gallery and Fawcett Media Center are hosting a series of artist talks, just like old times, but this time they will be hosted online. Web and Program Administrator Izzy Francolini says this virtual engagement will continue to serve as a distanced artist-in-residence program, starting with Benjamin Evans.
Benjamin Evans is one of our, what we're calling, our kind of like virtual open studio artists. So he is our artist-in-residence for, I believe, June. And like I said, so because of the pandemic, we haven't been able to have the artists travel here, just safety-wise. So instead, we've been doing virtual artists in residencies. And so part of that is that Benjamin Evans is doing an artist talk. So that is going to be Saturday at June 5th at 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be via Zoom. Again, just to create safety, we're still working on opening up to the public right now. So right now, you know, any artist talks are going to be via Zoom.
Benjamin Evans' ongoing project, the Dream Realization Laboratory, will be on display virtually throughout the month of June as an online open studio. The project is self-described by Evans as an art project in which he creates abstract digital visualizations, audio compositions, and sculptural objects based on the biometric data gathered from dreaming people or the narratives of their dream reports.
This project has like a variety of different forms that it's kind of taken. So actually, people who are interested in Benjamin Evans' work, and actually we've made on our website an artist page. And there's this great written text all about like what Benjamin Evans, how this project kind of came to fruition and stuff. And so One of the things that, like, is a piece of text from the actual website is, it actually began with an idea I had for a novel in which an artist had a scheme to save on rent by sleeping in a gallery. So it kind of started off with that idea, right? And then it turned into this, from my understanding of it anyway, as a new employee, kind of turned into this larger project of exploring, like, you know, thinking of like dreams and then maybe how that would take physical forms.
Struts is hosting Evan's Artist Talk this Saturday, June 5th at 3 p.m. over Zoom. You can find the link on chmafm.com. The provincial government has reduced the number of people waiting longer than a year for hip and knee replacements by half in just 5 months. From December 2020 to April 2021, the number of people on a waiting list decreased from 747 to 346. As part of a pilot project in St. John, over 450 hip and knee replacement surgeries have been completed at St. Joseph's Hospital since October 13, 2020. The Provincial Surgical Advisory Group and the regional health authorities have been working since June 2020 to address wait times, with a significant focus on those waiting longer than a year. The goal is to entirely eliminate all waiting periods of more than 1 year by the end of March 2022. The focus will then be directed towards attaining the nationally established wait time benchmark of 6 months. Last but not least on today's Tantramar Report. It's been a while since CHMA's check-in series took a look at local businesses and organizations in the Sackville area to see how they're faring in the pandemic economy. 15 months into the pandemic and on the cusp of restrictions being lifted, we thought we'd check in again with the small business community. This time, we hear from the owners of Mel's Tea Room, Wendy and Dave Epworth. I sat down with Wendy and Dave while they were on break from renovations at Mel's on a windy day in Sackville, just outside the Waterfowl Park entrance, with the roar of the TransCanada in the background.
My name's Wendy Epworth, and I own Mel's Tea Room with my husband Dave, and I've been born and bred Sackville person. I was in Esterbrook, so that's me.
Yeah, and I came to Sackville. I probably shouldn't tell everyone, but I came to Sackville when I was 17. I won't say how many years ago, several. And met Wendy, I don't know, probably the first week that I was here, and we sat at Mel's every day for years and years. And there was an opportunity a couple years ago to purchase the business, and I was looking at making a change from go back to what I did before. So we made the plunge, not the best time to do so, but you know.
This is the first time we've spoken to you since like COVID hit. Obviously, we've spoken to some other local businesses. So maybe like first take me back to the first wave, I guess the first impact, and how dramatic was that for your business? And then maybe we can talk about what it's like more than a year later. Because I think at first it was quite a shock.
Yes.
And everyone was reeling. Whereas now there's more, I don't know. I mean, I think it's still quite severe for people, but maybe people don't realize it as much.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. When everything, when sort of the world stopped in March of 2020, you know, we did what we could to remain open. We really felt that we had to just safely remain open to, you know, survive. And of course, you don't know how long it's going to go on at that point. So we tried to switch to takeout and things like that. But as time, you know, went on and people started to become accustomed to the COVID reality, quote unquote, you know, I think they started to think that every, you know, businesses should be back to normal and everything should be back to normal. But my goodness, it's, you know, business is still severely impacted.
One of the immediate challenges was with regards to staffing. We've employed, you know, several Mount A students over the years, well, the years that we've been operating. And when COVID hit, they basically all went home. And so we lost some staff. The business was very, very slow. So the opportunity to train new staff wasn't really there. We're still sort of feeling that as we prepare to open up the dining room. We're short-staffed, and we know that like training isn't really good money all the time. Anyway, sometimes you train people and they don't stick around. So where we are now, we have to sort of open and hope that people can get caught up to speed with minimal training, you know.
So what is the plan for reopening the dining room now? I'm sure everyone is dying to know.
I'm really anxious to reopen the dining room. But as Dave said, we definitely want there to be... We want to be able to anticipate enough business, whether that's, you know, a small New Brunswick tourist season or whether that's the return of the bubble, you know, so that we can, for one, you know, give staff that are being trained appropriate experience to learn under. And, you know, I think that I have so many ideas, you know, in terms of tailoring our offerings to different clientele and, you know, making sure those COVID protections are in place so that we can seat people, use the maximum amount of space for patrons. But, you know, you can only try so many things at once, so we're just going to open when the nice weather hits and just, you know, hope for the best.
One thing that I'm quite excited about is to start having some live music in there, sort of on the weekends, not necessarily at night, but just kind of afternoon matinee type stuff. You know, the idea originally was we wanted to have kids exposed to live music. That's something that I've always felt is lacking, not just here, but just in general. Like, kids, if they don't go to church, for instance, or they don't go to the parks and see sort of live free music, they don't really get to experience it. You don't bring kids to bars to see live music. So what I really would like to have is a spot where families bring their kids and the kids can all sit on the floor and watch musicians, because it's to me, that's very important. You know, when you walk down the street and there's a busker, the kids, they just stop, and they really engage with that, right? So that's sort of, you know, what we hope to gain in some of the sort of family friendly, I guess, artists and stuff that we can have come in.
Is that going to be part of the reopening plan for, I guess, when restrictions allow it? Like that, so that's on your list, I guess, as soon as you can. Is that the idea?
Yes, yes. We've moved a lot of... We've gotten rid of a lot of stuff that was just sort of taking up space to accommodate that. You know, pre-COVID, we did have a few events in there, private functions and stuff. We discovered that the space it works really well for live music. It's acoustically, it's not a bad room. The feeling is, I don't know, it's easy to sort of get into it in that space. It's, you know.
One thing that we did initially and have continued is to sort of increase the number of tables at the front of Mel's, because people like, you know, to be able to sit in larger groups. The booths are lovely, but sometimes, you know, most often, two people will sit in a booth. You might be maybe, you know, cozy up with four people in a booth. So when we have music in there, the tables can be moved to allow for more space in between groups, or, you know, and where I think Dave's envisioning the musicians to be. Can I tell them about the couches?
Yeah.
we're going to have two love seats or leather couches and a coffee table, so which will also be easy to move, but it'll create a bit of a more relaxing little atmosphere when we're not playing music, and then they can just be moved out of the way for times when we want to do shows.
So the renovations you guys are working on now, this is all sort of, I guess, with this plan in mind, is it? This is stuff you've been planning to do and you are taking the opportunity now to make some changes?
Well, yeah, if you want to have a silver lining for a slowdown in business, it's that, you know, closing on a few days a week or just doing takeout only sort of gave us the opportunity to get at some of these renovations that that we've wanted to do for a while. One of which I'm so excited.
That everybody wants to hear about.
Everyone. We're redoing the bathrooms. And so the whole idea behind the renovations was just to, you know, freshen things up, make things a little more modern, a little more efficient too for the wait staff. So, and then we have added bonuses of, you know, exploring ideas like shows that, you know, during the day. I don't like to be out late at night, so I'm looking forward to it as well.
And so are you thinking that you'll wait until there's at least some sort of reopening plan? The premier has been saying there's going to be a plan coming. Are you going to wait for that, or do you have a timeline that you've set for yourselves?
The timeline moves. but yes, like a significant percentage of our business is from Amherst. A lot of our customers they come over, so you know, we've sort of been waiting for that. I guess we've sort of been waiting for the right time to kind of reveal itself, so to speak, which I feel it will, and we need to continue what we're doing, and when the announcements are made about the potential bubble and stuff, we'll be ready to go at that time. You know, I have some ideas for musicians and stuff that we're just sort of waiting it out. And, you know, I don't want to put a specific date on it because
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to be able to say, oh, it's going to be this day, but it has been a real moving target. We're putting a lot of sweat equity into Mel's, and so the renovations are happening, you know, accommodating school kids' schedules and work schedules, and, you know, we're putting in a few hours here and there. Sometimes we'll close for a day. It's been a lot bigger of a job than maybe perhaps, you know, we thought initially, which is never a surprise when you get into something that like a renovation, and it's a pretty large space, so you know, redoing cleaning and redoing the floors and redoing the booths, and you know, there's been a lot of hours to put in. So
one thing I wanted to ask you about was the possibility of a sidewalk patio. Is that in the works, or is, you know, are there challenges there? What's up with that?
I'd love to have a patio. We've never gone through the process, so I think that will just be a challenge in and of itself. But we will be looking into it. You know, parking is an issue on Bridge Street, and when everyone has a patio, it reduces the parking further. You know, I wish there could be some sort of, I don't know, some sort of way to deal with that. We've even thought about building a patio in the back of Mel's in Willow Lane. But, you know, Willow Lane's not the most beautiful spot at this point. But we definitely would like to have outdoor seating capacity for the people at Mel's, not just because it's nice to eat outside, but because that is in the new COVID reality, that is important. So I don't know, maybe Bridge Street can go down to one way traffic and there can be all kinds of patios.
All right, well, is there anything else you want to CHMA listeners or Sac Billions to know about Mel's at this time?
Mel's has been a bit of a fixture for a long time. You know, we have felt an enormous amount of support and patience from everybody in town. We haven't really felt any pressure from anyone to, you know, hurry up and get going. They people seem to understand what's going on and you know, where we need to get before we can open up, and that's not just with us. I mean, that's with all the places in town. Sackville's very forgiving in a lot of ways, and they're, you know, I feel like we're being allowed to do our business as we see necessary, and when we're ready to go, the Sackville's ready to go, and it just feels nice to have real support.
Well, I guess I would just reiterate that. I mean, during this whole process, that we've seen people come up to the door and peek through the window and smile and wave at us as we're, you know, scrubbing and polishing, and so I'm excited to open up and see people come in again and enjoy the space. And you know, we're making some changes, but you know, it's not going to be a whole different feel. The feel's going to be the same, and hopefully the changes we make will be received positively by everyone, and I just, you know, I can't wait for it to happen.
That was Wendy and Dave Epworth of Mel's Tea Room. Mel's is open again for takeout after a hiatus for renovations, and the Epworths say they are looking forward to reopening for dine-in service soon. That's it for CHMA's Tantramar Report for this Thursday, June 3rd. As always, for story ideas, tips, or feedback, contact us at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.